WMMR.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I am, well, we all are very excited to have our next guest in the studio. I'm going to geek out pretty hard here in a moment, and I hope not to embarrass him too much. But the band is playing tonight at the Tower Theater, and you can bet your ass it's going to be a great show. Please welcome Of Simple Minds, Mr. Jim Kerr.
Yeah. Very kind of you. Thank you very much. A real pleasure to be here.
And by the way, Jim Kerr, I believe, is actually how you pronounce your last name, correct?
You got it right. In Glasgow, they would say that.
In Glasgow.
Here, they say more kind of Kerr.
Kerr.
Kerr. Which is nice, but we're a bit hard on the E, Kerr.
It reminds you where you are, I guess, when you hear your name pronounced a certain way.
Well, my mother's favorite actress was Deborah Kerr.
Ah, that's a good choice.
Nice compliment.
There you go.
I would like to, I'm going to start by throwing a lot of love your way. Your performance, and I'll get right to the song that broke the band in the United States, Don't You Forget About Me. Your performance of that particular song means so much to me. 1986, around that range, was when I was a senior in high school. The Breakfast Club, the film had come out, and it just spoke directly to a person like me. The song was such a huge part of the emotional impact of that film, and it has now become my almost... It's tangible, the emotion that I feel
when I
hear the song. It takes me back to that time in my life that was so important to my own personal development. I'm actually getting a little choked up here when I'm talking. And you were, you're the passion in your voice. Now, I'm probably going to overuse the word passion as we talk to you, Jim, because that's how I always categorize your vocal style. You're singing very, very passionate. And at that time, it rose above a lot of the other things that were on the radio at the time. And so, number one, I want to thank you. And I know that song wasn't written by you or your bandmates, but I think what you did with it just went above and beyond.
It's the performance.
And surpassed what that song really was.
Well, it's an honor to have any song that means so much to people, but particularly with that song, we are aware in the States, actually elsewhere, that song and the movie meant so much, not only to that generation, but amazingly, subsequent generations as well seem to have, it still seems, those John Hughes movies, he really hit a nerve. And I know what you mean in the sense that, you know, I'm a music fan as well, and there's still, it's an amazing thing with music. Even more than film, I think, and photographs, you hear certain songs and it takes you back to a place. It takes you to the very emotion.
Most definitely.
And you know, there are certain songs that do that for me. I can actually, for me, it was always radio in my mother's house. There's certain songs I hear, I can actually feel the, we called it Formica table, this cheap, this cheap breakfast table, because, you know, the radio was there. Uh-huh. We listened to radio breakfast, as everyone does here.
Yeah.
And there's certain songs I can actually feel, you know, I'm right at the table. And I get a little teary about that as well.
Oh, my God. It's so true. It's so powerful. And you, and I'm curious, here I am, a chance to meet you and say thank you in person and so forth. And you've had a tremendously successful career. Have you ever had a chance to speak to someone a la a David Bowie and say, that song meant so much to me? And do you feel a little odd saying that? Because I know you've heard it so many times, and I don't know if it gets old to you or not, and I feel a little embarrassed that I'm saying all this to you.
Well, you bet. I mean, whenever I'm not cool when I meet people that have meant a lot to me, whether it's sports stars or rock stars or whatever, or movie, I just go up and say, you're amazing. And, you know, but it's, I mean, some of them kind of don't want to talk about it or something. Have you ever found that?
Where you get that.
And someone just kind of went, whatever.
Well, it's confusing.
To it.
It is confusing when that happens.
Well, we've talked about this, Jimmy. It's sort of a liability when you meet people who've meant a lot to you, and then we use the phrase, they were them. They were exactly who you wanted them to be.
Yeah.
And it's like the ultimate when you get the person you hope they would be. Not everyone can be that, or some people, you know, sort of have sort of a jaded view, or they'll kind of frown upon what got them to the dance.
Or they're self-conscious or something.
Right, and for whatever reason. Yeah. And you'd almost rather keep the illusion than the actual reality. But when they do sync up and you get both, it's fantastic.
Well, I can talk about both for a minute, because as some of you might know, I was married to Chrissy Hynde.
Yes,
Chrissy's the greatest. I mean, she's just the greatest.
Well, I'll Stand By You, that's my wife. That's our wedding song,
You guys now share a grandchild together.
We do, indeed.
Yeah. congratulations.
And yeah, Chrissy, for, and she would be the first to say, when anyone goes up to her on the street and goes, wow, Chrissy, you know, she kind of goes right in her shell and
yeah.
she kind of doesn't know what to say. And it comes across as being cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then she will regret that for the rest of the week. Genuinely, she'll say, oh, I met that person. And they must think, well, I won't tell you what
she says.
But she doesn't mean it. Like, she just gets kind of, whereas Charlie Burchill, my songwriting partner and guitar player in Simple Minds, we were beyond fortunate last week in New York because we had a night off, and I'm sure you're aware Springsteen was playing in Broadway, and
so cool.
Just to get tickets to see the show was enough to be 20 yards from him where he's standing with an acoustic playing Born to Run, and the spit was almost touching us. In fact, we were running towards it. And then afterwards, we didn't know this. Afterwards, as we were about to leave, someone came out and said, oh, you know, John Landau, is Bruce's manager, would let you go back. And I'm sure no one will be surprised to hear me say that, you know, Bruce was just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just, he just wanted to talk about music, and he wanted to talk about a book that he'd written, of which the show is based on, of which we've all read. Uh-huh. And it was great to have someone as comfortable.
You love that. Did he relay any particular level of was he citing some of your work, or because he clearly, you know, you,
well, he's so, you know, he's so generous. We had played in New Jersey the night before.
Okay.
I think John had told him that, and we played, so it was, we're in his hood. And
yeah.
He had just spent time on stage saying how he had a love-hate with New Jersey. All he wanted to do was get out of there, hence Born to Run and all that. But, of course, he's still there. But he knew we'd played, and he was asking about the band and all that stuff. We have a few friends in common. Steve Van Zandt. We did a lot of things with Steve back in the day.
And the Sun City,
thing. And also Jimmy Iovine, who produced Born to Run. He just produced a track that you played there, Alive and Kicking. And also, you know, we'd met Bruce before as well. So
I think, and it's the truth, that the people who, you know, I love when directors, film directors, come in here and they're fans of other directors, because you clearly have, you just at a core have a passion for music.
That's right.
So you are a fan of other musicians.
Yeah.
And I think that informs your ability to be a great musician, you know?
I would think so. I think to do, if you're in love with something, you know, it must be, listen, if you've got a job that you love, no matter what that job is, you've won the lotto, because we know what it's like if you don't like your job.
Yes.
So if you're passionate about it, I mean, even today we're going to go along to the theatre 4:30 this afternoon. We're going to work on other stuff, songs that we want to bring into the set as the tour progresses.
That's great.
What I was chopping and changing, I'm excited about that, and it's only a sound check.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask about, Jim, yours and Simple Minds' history in Philadelphia. You played Live Aid here. From what I understand, you were the first band that was approached to play the Philadelphia show.
Well, certainly I remember getting the call from Geldof at the time. And it was amazing. You know, it was a great honor to be asked. And, of course, although obviously we're from the other side of the pond,
yeah,
at the time the song that you mentioned, Don't You Forget About Me, was really climbing high in the Billboard charts, and Bob said, you know, you got to do it in Philadelphia. Mm. We were only too happy. We were en route anyway to come here and record. But I don't think any of us were aware that all these years later that it, you know, in terms of rock and roll anyway, it's still the historical event, as our generation's Woodstock is.
Yeah.
Joan Baez, I think, alluded to that when she opened. That was her. But when you see now, even now, when I see the numbers that were there in the stadium's not longer,
no longer there. Was that day fairly chaotic?
And the way you would expect, I mean, I was talking outside, I mean, everyone was there, you know. I mean, it was a whole... The great thing was I brought across my dad.
Oh, wow.
He'd never been in the States before. And we sort of... He was wearing a bright yellow Scotland T-shirt. So I thought, how can you lose him? He's wearing a bright yellow... They said, what do you mean, how can you lose him? There are 120,000 people out there. But I saw him because he was wearing this...
The bright yellow Scotland T-shirt,
And he said to me, come here, I want to introduce you to this guy. I want to introduce you. Who's here? Now, you think, you know, Madonna was there and Tina Turner and Mick Jagger and all that. And we went round. And there was this guy sitting on his amplifier, just strumming away.
Yeah.
Total dignity. Bo Diddley.
Ah, Bo Diddley.
And my dad said to me, Bo Diddley, if it wasn't for him, there would be no Live
Aid. Legendary,
you know, there would be no Rock and Roll. If it wasn't for these guys, and of course he was right. Yeah. So, memories like that come to the forefront.
Special. You mentioned Jimmy Iovine, and I saw the special on HBO about him, The Defiant Ones, and he talked about producing Born to Run and how frustrating it was because Bruce was such a perfectionist when it came to putting that record. And eventually somebody had to tell Jimmy, it's not your record, Jimmy, it's Bruce's. Let Bruce do what he needs to do. What was it like for you guys working with him?
I mean, we've been so lucky. We worked with Jimmy, Bob Clearmountain, Trevor Horn, Steve Lillywhite, all these people. But Jimmy just had this way. It's funny because I can tell the jury was out. Some of the people around us didn't quite get Jimmy.
Really?
Because Jimmy was more a kind of ringmaster. He couldn't go in and tell you technically what was wrong or what was right. It was all feel. And he had a great kind of meter on him with that. That feels great. That's where you should be. But he made you feel great. And if you felt great, then you're going to perform. He gave you confidence. And I in some ways, we've never met anyone like Jimmy in that sense. He would be, you know how in sports you get a coach, I say this, that make journeymen believe they're much better than they are.
Yeah. Right.
Jimmy did that to us.
It would seem like some producers are more musicians and some guys are more directors. And when it comes to instructing a band, and he seems like more the director kind.
I'll tell you a funny story about it, and this is the way he is too, because Alive and Kicking, we'd put together the demo. See, we were all a bit weirded out with the success of Don't You Forget About Me, because it became this kind of colossal thing, the movie and MTV, and everyone was all over it.
It was just a confluence of things going on, yeah.
And Jimmy was like, you know, what are you going to do to follow it up? it's a monster, what are you going to do, you know? And we were like, I don't know, relax, we'll come up with something. And so we came up with this, basically the structure for Alive and Kicking. He's like, that's great, you know, like, get it down, that's going to be amazing. And we all felt that. But I had done a guide vocal, kind of sketch lyrics, that I meant to come back and finish off. And the first line, and it's, you know, you turn me on. So I go to do it for real, and I change the line to something else. And he goes, hang on a minute, where's You Turn Me On? I said, you can't sing with You Turn Me On. That's terrible. That's garbage. You Turn Me On. I won't be able to go home to Glasgow if I sing that. People will just rip the out of me. And he went, you're going to change that? And I said, yeah. And he went, my wife loves it. All Vicky's friends love it. Everyone loves it. You can't change it. I said, I'm changing it. And he goes, he starts taking out his car keys and his house. He says, here, take them, because I'm going to lose my house here. You're going to cost me a fortune. And he was kind of half serious.
Yeah.
So it stayed.
Uh-huh. Hey, listen.
And it kind of works.
It works
as long as I don't think about it.
But it's funny because you as the artist are going to be hypercritical. It's something that we have to think about, even on our level of just doing what we do.
Yeah.
You know, like program directors or whatever, listen with different ears.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing, I think, and probably what distinguishes a good producer who is able to produce hits, listens as the consumer hears it.
Yeah. Well, in my head, if you're Marvin Gaye, you can sing You Turn Me On.
Right.
If you're some little white nerdy guy from Glasgow with freckles gone, You Turn Me On. It's creepy. But not according to Jimmy.
You were a tad bit nerdy, Jim.
A bit nerdy, yeah.
But that's right. Chrissy Hynde seems like when you guys got together, I remember thinking, wow, she's like the leather rock chick, and this guy, that's kind of wild.
Bit off a bit more than I could chew. but you got to give me kudos for
thumbs up
for daring to dance.
yes, absolutely. I want to, while I have you here, I want to throw a name out and give some love to somebody who may not know the name. His name is Mel Gaynor, and Mel is a drummer for Simple Minds. And so I, as a young teenage drummer, immediately, outside of your vocals, and as I said, the passion that you brought to the melodies, was fixated on what a fantastic drummer this guy is.
Oh, he's amazing.
I'm
he's
telling incredible. You. And I'm going to play a little clip of Don't You Forget About Me, because I think it is one of the sexiest lead-ins to a hook of any song that's ever been played. It's right before the la-la-la-la part. Man, does he kick it in right here. This song wouldn't be the same without it, I don't think. Right here. Just brilliant. It just brings it all the way home.
Preston, you said I was a little nerdy. You were looking a little nerdy there when you were doing it. I got you.
You saw my air drumming.
Look at this key. The thing is, from the stage, when you look out at that, the whole front row kind of goes.
Air drumming.
But he did this thing. He does these double crashes on the cymbals, which... he and Stuart Copeland were kind of the only guys doing it at the time.
Stuart's brilliant as
He's phenomenal. Yeah. And I just and Mel did it a lot. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure his name was mentioned because that
he's amazing.
Play.
However, I have to say, the girl who's playing with us just now, Charisse Osei, she's already been voted in the top five drummers.
No kidding.
You got to see, I mean, Charisse is tiny.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women playing drums is great, but the power.
Okay.
The power drummer?
I mean, just, she's like, she sounds like John Bonham.
Mm. I want to ask you with your sound, because you mostly, would you describe yourself, the earliest iteration of the band as more of a punk band?
Well, we came out of that. I mean, we, 6 months prior to Simple Minds starting, we were in this band called Johnny and the Self-Abusers.
I love that name.
It was all downhill after that. I love the name as well. And the best thing about the band, I mean, if you think of the whole punk ethos, they recorded one single and split up the day the single was released. I mean, that's pretty punk.
There you go.
But we grew out of, in Glasgow, we grew out of everything, prog rock, whatever, Motown music, but certainly that punk thing when it happened in 77, that was the thing that became the catalyst for kids to believe.
But your sound, I remember you could easily instantly tell your sound, and I would, without saying it's, to me, the way you can tell Phil Spector, a big sound.
It is,
And to come from what is a sparse format.
To that.
Is a big jump.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, your DNA, you know, it's just there. Sometimes it's hard to know where it came from.
Right, you just let it go.
That's your trademark. That's your thing.
Those 1980s were a wonderful time in music because there was a bridge of music there was a gap. So you guys kind of fell into this thing that was called New Wave at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember my friend, and I couldn't have you without mentioning my friend Tim. He and I were both into Rush and Van Halen and Ozzy Osbourne and Judas Priest and all this stuff, and we were just rockers to the core. And you guys came along, and I liked some of the new wave stuff as well. I mean, I was a fan of what Duran Duran was doing and some others. And my friend Tim just couldn't get past your vocal style, and I had to sit him down with your music, and I go,
I can't get past that.
But I, because you've got this kind of breathy style that you bring to the forefront, and once I told him, I'm like, this guy is singing with emotion. I'm like, listen to this. It's not just straight out screaming his head off. He's taking some vocal chances here. And after that, Tim told me, he talked to me years later, he's like, you know what? You don't realize this, but you kind of changed my appreciation for another
him
kind
into
of
it. Thank
I
you.
Him into it. Talked him into it.
Did you sit him down and say, breathy vocals, this is your guy?
If you want.
I'm gonna put that on my business card now.
Jim Kerr.
Breathy vocals.
The Mitzvahs, birthday parties, you want breathy vocals, I'm your guy.
That's great.
God, that is too funny. When that time, when you guys hit, when you went from a band who was really struggling to, not necessarily struggling, but you were creating an audience slowly, this rise, and then boom, you hit, and all of a sudden you're the toast of the town. What is that, an immediate switch? Did you guys notice things right away as soon as you had top hit records?
Well, you know, when obviously in the States, the whole thing with the Breakfast Club and Don't You, it took us through the door and at the big league. However, other countries, we had records put out earlier, so we had...
And you had hit number one a couple of times in other countries.
Yeah, we did. So there was a, you're never really ready for it, but there was a growing, you know, there was a momentum. But no, I think it was hell of exciting. To be honest, I don't think we would have admitted then, but it was also a little scary,
yeah.
You know, because suddenly your band, and I don't mean this, anyone should feel sorry for us, but there's a point you realize your band is not just your band anymore. You know, there's an industry around your band. Your band becomes an industry in itself. There's a lot more people involved and all that. And that's great, but you're learning on the hoof. And then when you're learning on the hoof, you're bound to make some mistakes. Even now, I look back and I think, should have looked at that differently or whatever. But
that's life in general.
Well, listen, you're right. Tomorrow morning, I'll feel that. I'll look back on the gig tonight and hopefully think that was great, but I know how we can make that better.
Sure.
And that's a sort of micro.
And once you stop doing that, what's the reason to, you know, you're always looking to
there
to
you
excel.
Go.
To, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, no, it was amazingly exciting. And it's, even now I laugh and I'll tell them tonight, you know, you go around and I'll get in a taxi or something. The guy'll say, what are you doing? And I'll say, what band's you in? And he'll say, oh, I love your band. Your band's incredible. Don't you forget about me. They played it at my wedding and you're my favorite band. I go, do you know any other songs? And they'll go, people say, doesn't that tick you off? No, it doesn't.
Good.
Because if someone even likes one of your songs, you should feel honored.
I was going to ask that very question. You guys have had 18 albums, I believe.
Mm.
And I was wondering if that is an ego bruise or not, that most people know 3 to 4 songs out of that entire catalog of music.
Who are you to tell anyone what they should be listening to? If there's even one song they like, thankfully there's a few people that like a ton more than one.
I read a quote from Rod Stewart the other day, who's currently working on a new album, and he had said, you know, he's like, I've stopped trying to write Tonight's the Night and Do You Think I'm Sexy and things like that. Right now I'm basically writing songs for me, and some people are going to like them. It's not my time to sell 20 million records anymore. And he's just in a place where he's just happy because he likes to create music.
And that's actually the best place. I mean, honestly, if you know, look, to be able to be doing what you're doing, when you consider all the bands that and to have a loyal fan base that's come with you through the years, the odds of that occurring, that's literally lightning in a bottle. I mean, it's an impossible thing, and yet you have it.
You hit the nail on the head, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned earlier that you have worked together for 20 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations
for
that.
Thank you.
We, in February past, we celebrated 40 years from our first gig.
40 years.
40 years. And people ask us, you know, go back, you know, try and put yourself in the head that you had, your young head that you had, and can you remember what you wanted out of this?
Right.
And I do clearly remember what we wanted out of this, and it was fairly minimal. Beyond our dreams, but fairly minimal. We wanted to be in a great live band, and we wanted to take it around the world. And here we are 40 years later, still getting the chance to deal with that challenge. And it's been an amazing life doing that. Everything else that's happened, the ups and downs and the high points and the low points, and the rewards that have come and all that, they're all the extras.
Yeah.
That's still the fundamental thing we still want to do.
It's wonderful to hear that.
And we'll bring that. That's what we'll bring tonight. You know, minutes before we go on stage, we won't be thinking about did this sell and did that not sell and what was. We'll just be wanting to go out and prove ourselves as a great live band when we go on at the Tower Theatre tonight.
Excellent. So the show,
tickets are available.
Yeah, like Jim was saying, is tonight, and you go to livenation.com, and it's going to be a great time. And I loved seeing you guys get together for the it was the first time I'd seen you in a while. Was it at the Oscars where they did that?
Because
they had the cast of Breakfast Club come out, and that had to have been really cool.
Yeah, guys, it was amazing. And they looked like they were having a blast.
I hadn't heard you in a while, and it sounds phenomenal. So tonight's show should be great.
We're going at it. We're having a great tour. We can't believe we're getting a chance to come back. This is our first extensive tour of the States for a long, long time.
Yeah.
We're about a week and a half in, and you know, people are just going mental every night.
I love it. So. Excellent. Jim, it's an honor to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Right. All of you.
Our pleasure. Yeah,
Jim Kerr, guys. Yay! On the Steve Show. And once again, I'll hit that. The Tower Theater tonight. It is Simple Minds, and you can get your tickets at livenation.com. Don't miss out on the show. We're going to take a quick break and be back in just a moment. Make sure you stay with us.
Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Ladies and gentlemen,